In today's declining marketplace, which collector cars are bucking the trend? Which entry-level Ferrari is up over 45% in the latest 12 months? Which 1980s Sportster is up over 30%? What German truck is also up 30%? Now find out on this episode of the Collector Car Podcast. Okay, this is a call out to my listeners. I do not have a lot of sponsors for this podcast on purpose because I don't want to waste your time with products I am not crazy about. Well, I do have two that I am crazy about. The first one is LLC TLC. This is where you can save money on your car registration. Every year, you can set up a Montana LLC and pay no sales tax on your vehicle purchases, which is really amazing. Now, you can also permanently register your classic cars in Montana to avoid any annual renewal fees. And as your registered agent, LLC TLC will handle everything for you, so you never have to step foot in Montana to take advantage of this incredible offer. Now, as a listener of this podcast, they are offering 30% off your entire package. Now, to get this, simply go to LLCTLC.com/classic or mention this podcast when you call them directly. My other big sponsor of this podcast is Euro Classics out of Dayton, Ohio. Now, that's Euro Classic with an X.com. If you want to reach them in person, you can reach them at 937-299-1311. Now, this is where I get all of the work done on my Porsche. I just had my GTO in there. My Mustang's been in there. It is the place to go if you want awesome service at an extremely competitive price. So when you go there, just ask for Dale and tell him that I sent you. All right, first for a couple updates, I am speaking in Dallas as you listen to this. This is a fun event at a couple different collector car locations. And I am speaking about valuation trends, market trends, the GTO sale, some of my thoughts on what cars the next generation is trying to pursue that will go in value in the future. So if you have a cool car place that you would like for me to speak at, please shoot me a note, gstanley@rmsotheby's or greg@thecollectorcarpodcast. I would love to meet you in person and share some of my fun stuff from this podcast. All right, next, we are looking for consignments for the big Monterey sale coming up in August. Now, we also will be looking for cars for Hershey in October. So if you have cars for either one of those auctions, please feel free to reach out to me. It's really difficult to get into the Monterey sale. So if you have something really special, I'd love to talk to you about it. Now, Sotheby's Motorsports has taken off online sales. Now, this is mostly for quote-unquote used supercars in the price point of $100,000 to $1 million. You can definitely check that out. They have some great cars coming up for sale. All right, let's move on to this episode here. So I'm going to talk about 18 cars that have appreciated in the last 12 months, even though a majority of the market has not or has remained flat. Now, I will say most of these cars, for valuation purposes, all of these cars are in number two shape. Now, this is not complete. This is just a few that I saw that I thought were interesting. Now, what's really interesting are the generations, the decades that are being represented here. So of the 18 cars, we have six that are from the 1970s and five that are from the 1980s, and the remainder are from the 1990s and the 2000s. So who says there's a generation shift going on out there? I say that there definitely is. The first car I'm featuring on this episode is the 1974 BMW 2002 TII. Now, the example I'm showing on the website on the YouTube is the Lux, L-U-X version. Now, latest 12 months, these are up 4.8%. Average price in number two condition is $68,100. Now, what's interesting, it is up 4.8% in number two condition. In number four condition, fair condition, they're actually down 17%. The 2002 is perhaps the most famous of BMW's new class line, and it revitalized the Bavarian automaker's historically underwhelming international reputation. The world was captivated by the 2002's attractive blend of power, agility, and style, in addition to its reasonable price tag. 2002s were offered in two varieties in the U.S., the single-carbed 100-horsepower base 2002 and the uber-sporty 2002 TII. Both were powered by a 2-liter single-overhead cam straight-four, but the TII added mechanical fuel injection to wring out 130 horsepower. Other variations included the Cabriolet Targa, a 3-door touring model, a twin-carbureted TI, and a rare turbo, all intended for European consumption only.
Okay, the next car for this list is the 1975 BMW 3.0 CSL quote-unquote Batmobile. Now, over the last 12 months, these are up 12.7%. Average number two price is $496,000. These are absolutely stunning, beautiful cars. When BMW launched its two-door, six-cylinder CS line of sports coupes in 1968, internally designated as the E9, only the badge on the nose and the twin kidney bean grille resemble BMW's other two-door sport coupe offerings, the 2002. With straight six power and displacements ranging from 2.5 to 3.5 liters, and a longer, leaner, more agile outside appearance, the CS lineup spoke to a different buyer. Tops among the various CS cars in terms of performance and desirability was the 1972 3.0 liter CSL. Following several years of development and modest racing success in the European Touring Car Championship, with various iterations of the CS, the CSL for Coupe Sports Lightweight was created as a homologation special, a hot rod aimed straight at the racetrack. Very, very cool, very, very beautiful car. All right, next of my 18 cars that is appreciating this year is this, the 2007 Cadillac XLR-V. Now, latest 12 months, they are 5.1%. Average number two price is $55,800. These are beautiful cars based on the Corvette chassis and drivetrain, but it retains, I believe it's the Northstar V8, beautiful angular cars that have really started to take off recently. Now, when you get these, be sure it has complete servicing on the engine, as sometimes those Northstar V8s can be a little temperamental. All right, next is a 1978 Chevrolet Corvette Silver Anniversary. Now, I drove one of these recently, and I really enjoyed it, much more so than I thought I would. Up 5.3%, average number two price just under $30,000. The Chevrolet Corvette celebrated its 25th anniversary in 1978 and was chosen to pace the Indy 500. Chevrolet car sales rose in total to just over $2.4 million, and just under 47,000 of those were Corvettes. The base price had risen to just over $9,300, but Chevrolet also offered an Indy 500 pace car replica for a whopping $13,600. Wow, that's a lot. That's $4,300 more than the base Corvette. These 1978 Corvette pace cars had two-tone silver and black paint, their own number sequence, and white letter tires. Now, in all honesty, I did not look up the pace cars for this podcast. I was focusing on the silver anniversary, of which just over 15,000 were built. The 1978 model was modified significantly with a fastback rear window like the C2 Corvette of the mid-1960s. It did not open, but there was more room behind the seats and retractable cover for shade. The instruments were redone in a square style and a glove box added. New door panels introduced bolt-on armrests instead of molded ones. All right, next for the 18 cars that are appreciating this year, the 1982 Datsun 280ZX. Latest 12 months, up 8.3%. Number two condition, average just over 31,000 miles. The Datsun 240Z was a game changer when it debuted in late 1969. Reliable, fast, and a bargain, the Z instantly redefined what a sports car could be. For British and Italian competition, it was like the comet that killed the dinosaurs. Like anything else, however, all good things must come to an end, and by the late 1970s, the original concept was beginning to run its course. The 280Z was essentially a 240Z with big impact bumpers and fuel injection. Datsun needed something newer and flashier. Enter the 280ZX in 1978. Sports car purists who watched the Brock Racing Enterprise Datsun clean up were horrified. The ZX was a GT for the disco era with two-tone paints, T-tops, velour seats, and fancy stereos. It was certainly softer and less sporting, but it filled the niche well, and like the 260Z and the 280Z, was available in a 2+2 body, which the ZX seemed to fill out better than previous cars. Ironically, the 280ZX was raced successfully too, in some cases, by actor Paul Newman. With added weight, performance predictably suffered. In order to deal with this, Nissan offered a turbocharger option starting in 1981 that raised the power output from 140 horsepower to 180 horsepower. Brakes and suspension were subsequently improved in 1982, making the last two model years of the turbo the most performance-oriented of the 280ZXs. All right, next is the 1995 Honda Integra Type R. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, please ignore this picture. This is one of the Fast and Furious cars that was sold by Arm Sotheby's way back in Auburn Fall, back in 2011. Now, these, for the latest 12 months, have gone up 4%, average price $56,600. All right, the next car on our list is actually a truck, a sport ute, the 1999 Jeep Cherokee Limited. Latest 12 months, up 8.1%, average price $22,600. Jeep traditions are proudly held, dating back to the original Willys MB of 1941 and continue through the CJ series of today's Wrangler. Another integral part of Jeep's past is the 1984 to 2001 XJ Cherokee, the first American unibody compact SUV, which set the pattern for many imitators. It was sold in nearly every country in the world, and in true Jeep fashion, the XJ profile was recognizably the same from beginning to end. I always thought these were really good looking Jeeps. The Limited was offered from 1987 to 1992 and again from 1998 to 2001. It included most power and luxury options, including air conditioning. It too was replaced by the Country between 1993 and 1998. The Sport ran from 1988 to 2001 with selective power and luxury options. The Classic appeared in 1996 and was replaced by the Limited in 1997. The final Cherokee models were the Freedom in 2000 and 60th Anniversary in 2001, both of which were based on sport model options. All right, next we're going to look at a couple Italian stallions. The first one, this 1974 Lamborghini Espada 400 GT Series 3, latest 12 months, up 9.3%, average price, number two condition, $164,000. Lamborghini finally offered a proper four-seat GT as a replacement for the 400 GT 2+2 when the Espada appeared at the Geneva Auto Show in 1968. This new coupe amazed showgoers with its lengthy and low proportions. The new Espada legitimately had room for four occupants, unlike most 2+2s of the day, and it was powered by the familiar Weber carbureted V12 that made 325 horsepower. The package could run a 7-second 0 to 60 sprint and could cross the continent at 155 miles an hour. In-period reviews of the Espada commended it for its leather appointments as well as an independent suspension that made for a very stable platform well into the 130 mile per hour range. It was the perfect conveyance for shortening the journey between cities in Europe. I always thought these were really cool, beautiful in a weird and quirky way. I would love to have one of these. I know the parts are really hard to find, especially some of the trim pieces and such, but very, very cool car. All right, next we are sticking with Lamborghini, the 1988 Lamborghini Countach LP 5000 Quattrovalve, up 14.2% latest 12 months, number two condition, $731,000. All right, Lamborghini unveiled a prototype of its revolutionary Countach supercar at the 1971 Geneva Motor Show with styling by Marcello Gandini, who already had the Miura to his credit. The exotic 5-liter V12 powered wedge, dubbed the LP500, had people talking. Enough that Lamborghini moved forward with production and the Countach LP400 road car debuted for 1974. Lamborghini revised the Countach for 1985 with the introduction of the LP5000 SQV, which stood for 4 valves per cylinder. Engine size increased slightly to 5.1 liters, and U.S. cars were fitted with a Bosch K Jetronic fuel injection system, which apparently was pretty horrible. As a result, the new car produced 420 horsepower. Euro cars kept their 6 Weber carburetors and delivered 455 horsepower. So that's a common swap on these cars, is put the Euro carbs on it. No increase in power could outshine the stuck-on front impact bumper, however. Also new were rocker panel air intakes to the rear brakes. So this is also where the Euro bumpers are typically put on in place of the US bumpers. All right, the next car, I do not have a picture of it, so I'm putting a sister car online. The next car is the 2010 Lotus Exige. Now, I don't have a picture of this car, so if you're watching online, I have a Lotus Elise, which is absolutely beautiful. So, let's see, this car is up 6.1%, latest 12 months, average price, number two condition, $83,600. Really cool little Lotus. This is one that you'd want to find and really enjoy before these get too expensive, because they're still within a somewhat reasonable price range. All right, the next car I'm focusing on is the Magnum PI car, the 1989 Ferrari 328 GTS. Latest 12 months, up 30.6%. Average price, $175,000. 10 years after Ferrari launched the 308 GTB at the Paris Motor Show, the company gave the model a performance boost in the guise of the 328 GTB and 328 GTS. The two-seat mid-engine coupe and Targa also received minor exterior revisions that softened the angularity of the 308. In particular, the grille was brought forward to flatten the car's nose and the bumpers became bodied colored. In 1989, Ferrari replaced the 328 GTB with the 328 GTS with the new 348 TB and TS models. The new car was a departure from the 308 and 328 that came before it, being more in line with the cues established by the Testarossa. Ferrari 328s can be great fun to own and drive, provided you follow a preventative schedule of maintenance that includes the timing belts every 3 to 5 years. It is also wise to avoid cars with rust, as this can be costly to fix. More than 6,000 Ferrari 328 GTS models were manufactured, and more than 1,300 closed cars were produced, meaning buyers can afford to be selective. Okay, next, we are sticking with entry-level Ferraris, and this is one I really don't think I've talked about before. The 1978 Ferrari Dino 308 GT4, latest 12 months, up 45.4%, average price just over $93,000. Ferrari introduced the 308 GT4 in 1973 under the Dino name as a mid-engine 2+2 stablemate to their successful Dino 246 GT, and it represented several firsts for the company. It was the first and only time that Bertone was to style a road-going production Ferrari, and as such, its web shape is distinctively different than the Pininfarina-styled cars that came before and after it. It was also their first mid-engine 2+2. Finally, the Dino 308 GT4 represented Ferrari's first true use of a V8 in a road car. This brand new 3-liter quad-cam 90-degree V8 motor had 4 Weber carburetors and made 250 horsepower in European tune. It was mounted with this 5-speed gearbox as a unit transversely behind the rear seats. The chassis was based on that of the Dino 246 GT, but with a longer 100.4-inch wheelbase and independent upper and lower wishbone suspension at all 4 corners. The Ferrari Dino 308 GT4 is today a fine choice for the enthusiast who wants a wonderful handling mid-engine Ferrari with plenty of room for 2 and their luggage. It also inspires its driver with a wonderful carbureted V8 sound just behind the cabin. Like all cars in the 308 series, the GT4 requires a timing belt service every 4 to 5 years, but this is not nearly the maintenance or financial headache that folklore might indicate, provided the car has a strong service history and has not suffered from a life of deferred maintenance. These are really cool, beautiful cars. The example I'm showing online is actually like an off-white with a bright red interior, which is quite striking. All right, we're sticking with entry-level Ferraris. This next one is the iconic 1990 Ferrari Testarossa. I'm not going to go in depth on this one because I've spoken about the Testarossa so much over the last few years. Needless to say, latest 12 months, this one is up 11.1%. Average price, just over $221,000. Now, we'll say entry-level. That is expensive for an entry-level car. I guess I should have clarified by saying V12-powered Ferrari. So this one has the big V12 engine in the back. Classic, iconic Miami Vice styling. Absolutely stunning car. All right, our next car is something really affordable. The 1985 Subaru Brat. Now this is the mini truck. Now this one, latest 12 months, is up 16.2%. Average price, just over $23,000. In the late 1970s, Subaru was beginning to understand that all-wheel drive in a passenger car would become its signature feature and main selling point. Up to 1978, Subaru offered a line of small, inexpensive economy passenger cars and four-wheel drive station wagons. That year, the Japanese automaker introduced the Brat, a multi-purpose vehicle that would eventually rise to cult status. The Brat was based on the same passenger car underpinnings as the rest of the Subaru line, but was designed with a pickup truck bed similar to the concept behind the Chevrolet El Camino or Ford Ranchero. While the Brat nameplate reflected the irreverent and sporty nature of the marketing for the new vehicle, the name is also an acronym for Buy Drive Recreational All-Terrain Transporter. I did not know that. That's very cool. Today, the Brat has achieved cult status among Subaru four-wheel drive enthusiasts, and it is prized for its small size and great capability. Enthusiasts have transplanted later Subaru drivetrains into the Brat, giving it far more power, and upgraded the suspension to make the vehicle even tougher in off-road conditions. Get these while you can. All right, next, I won't go in depth, but it's a 1977 Saab 9.9 Turbo. This one has gained a lot lately, up 40% latest 12 months. Average price, $21,100. All right, moving on to the 1980 Triumph TR7. Now, this one has grown quite a bit the last 12 months in value, up 33.3%. Average price, $12,800. It is well settled that the last of the volume-produced traditional British roadsters to be designed was the Triumph TR6. Even in 1969, when it was introduced, it was obsolete. Magazines like Road and Track clamored for better, newer sports cars with modern engine, chassis, and unibody construction. Cars that would finally dispense with antiquated features like lever-action shocks and feeble heaters. In early 1975, Triumph finally introduced such a car on the TR7, which would be sold alongside the TR6 for about a year. Dubbed in ads as the shape of things to come, the TR7 was the most extreme example of the wedge then style. The TR7 was the most extreme example of the wedge style then in vogue. Legend has it that the original design was sketched on a cocktail napkin by stylist Harris Mann. Perhaps the most unsuccessful portions of the design were the notchback roofline of the coupe and the upswept character line on the side. Triumph TR7 suffered the usual rust issues, though not to the extent of earlier TRs. The four-cylinder engine had head gas troubles as well. From a parts support standpoint, despite low survivorship, spares aren't as difficult to locate as one might expect. That's actually pretty funny. All right, two more cars to go, both VWs. All right, the first one, 1990 VW Corrado. Latest 12 months up 28.6%, average price $22,500. In 1990, Volkswagen brought out the Corrado, which was marketed as VW's first full-blooded sports car. The new Corrado replaced the outgoing Scirocco and was hourly very similar to that car. The new Corrado maintained the front-wheel drive and basic hot hatch sport compact design that VW had used for the Rabbit, Cabriolet, and Scirocco since the mid-1970s, but added a supercharged and fuel-injected 1.8-liter G60 engine, good for 158 horsepower and 166 pound-feet of torque. For the initial model year, only a 5-speed manual transmission was available on this car. All right, ironically, the last car I'm going to cover is the predecessor to that car, the 1987 Volkswagen Scirocco 16-valve. I won't go into depth on this one, but latest 12 months, it is up 27.6%. Average price, $39,300.
Well, as always, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your support. Please share with your friends, and I will talk to all of you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Collector Car Podcast. Don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and everywhere else at the Collector Car Podcast.